From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office at the Spring Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana today. But no worries, we have a great program for you. No update of what happened in the commodity markets. However, we'll begin by talking about the crop insurance decisions farmers and landowners will be making by the 15th day of the month. Gary Schnitke has gone through the numbers. I talked to him about all of those decisions. You want to hear that. And we'll also discuss the marketplace with Ed Usset, agricultural economist from the University of Minnesota and Extension. And we'll discuss the Ukraine-Russia issues with him and how he sees the wheat market as it plays on the global market and in corn across the United States. All on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Gary Schnitke now joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Gary, thank you for being with us, and thank you for the time you're spending on this day with me over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm sure it is a fantastic meeting. However, as you and I are talking on Tuesday, rather Monday evening, we probably ought to go through some of the things that we've not discussed since the crop insurance setting month was completed in February. First, can you start off with just what the crop insurance numbers are for corn and soybeans, and then we'll take up some of the decisions producers need to make by the 15th day of this month?
Yeah, so the projected prices were set for both corn and soybeans. The corn projected price is $5.90 per bushel, which is a near a record high. We had one higher projected price than that back 2011, I believe it was. The volatility was 0.23, which is really high and will cause the premiums this year to be high as well. Soybeans had a 14.33 projected price, which again is a relatively high level, or much higher than we've been in recent years. And the volatility is 0.19 for soybeans. That is the same as last year, but still those are elevated volatility levels and will lead to higher premium. Both the projected price and volatilities being high will lead to higher premium.
Well, let's talk about that to begin with. How much higher premium should a farmer in on high productivity soils in central Illinois expect than in previous years, I suppose, or than what they think the average might be?
Yeah, so if you're looking at an RP policy in central Illinois at 85% for corn, you're in the $30 per acre range, 30, 35, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on your county and your APH, trend adjusted APH. That's probably $6, $7, $8 higher than last year. So we're moving up in premium. All of that is due to the higher volatility and the higher projected price. So $30 for an RP 85 policy. And if you take an RP 80%, it'll be in the $15 to $18 per acre range.
Does that kind of savings cause you to think that producers, and I know producers will be thinking about it, does that cause you to think that they maybe should consider a lower RP for their corn?
Yeah, I wouldn't go down in coverage level this year, 85%. You know, at that 85% level and that 590 projected price, we're getting pretty close to covering cost when we take an 85% coverage level. That's given the average cash rent. Obviously, if we have $400 or so cash rents, we would not be covering. But that 85%, you're getting some reasonably high coverage and assuring yourself of sort of a year that that won't be too bad if all of this breaks. And I would note that we have much higher volatilities after the projected price setting period. So we have more risk out there because of the fighting that's going on in Ukraine.
And on the soybean side, what do the numbers look like?
So soybeans will be a little bit less, but let me give you an example for Champaign County, but we're looking at premiums for at that 1433 price, 19% volatility, sort of in the $14-$15 per acre range for RP85, and that's at an enterprise level. So, you know, not as high as corn, but we have a bit lower volatilities, and we haven't had many payments on soybeans, so our risk levels are lower there as well. Again, I would suggest keeping pretty high coverage levels this year. Again, we're in an elevated risk situation, and that 85% will, again, cover, or the revenue guarantee will come close to covering, you know, the non-land and land costs. So we're getting at a level where, you know, the year won't be as bad as some could have thought it to be.
Yeah, so the other farm programs that we need to discuss, and I'll put these in at the moment just because I want to come back and talk about SCO and EC and the enhanced coverage option as well. ARC and PLC, because of the high price, are we mostly just at ARC County for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't sweat the details too much on either one of those because they're not likely to pay. If you want to take SCO, supplemental coverage off it, option, you would have to take PLC. I'm pretty now agnostic about your choice between PLC and ARC. I don't know. It seems hard to get prices below the reference prices, but you never know. And it's even going to be hard to get prices to trigger ARC County payments because we're likely to have pretty high market year average prices next year, and benchmark prices haven't risen all that much. So
very quickly, if you are in PLC, you can use SCO. It covers what? And then ECO is on top of that, and you'll need to talk maybe a bit more about it.
Yeah, so ECO and SCO are county-level products above your combo product. I'm going to talk about them in terms of RP. So if you take an RP policy, you can get SCO, which will provide county-level coverage from 86% down to the coverage level of your RP policy, 85 or 80. And ECO is the added above that from up to either 90 or 95%. Either one of those are pretty good options to consider this year. RP at the 90% level, you might consider buying that alternative and then not really worrying about marketing for a while because you've got a 90% guarantee. It's going to be kind of costly, but you'll get a 90% guarantee and, you know, just wait and see what the year brings. Again, we are in a heightened price volatility market. The volatilities on corn, for example, were 0.30 last week, and we used 0.23 to set the volatility. So where this all shakes out, I don't know. You could see much lower prices in the future, so that guarantee may be worthwhile. So,
and one item that producers may have heard about, but certainly will be told about if they haven't already been by their crop insurance agent, is the PACE endorsement. This is for nitrogen applications that are put on after planting. Can you tell me a little bit about it? And it doesn't cover the whole of the Corn Belt. It's a pilot program, but it covers a lot of the Corn Belt.
Yeah, in Illinois, it's northern and central Illinois. So it covers probably about half of your area, northern and central Illinois. You can get a policy that will pay you a fixed payment if you're unable to apply nitrogen after planting. So there's various items that you can specify. One of those is the percent that you plan on applying after plant, and there's a price factor in there as well. The premiums for that usually, for example, if you're saying you're going to apply 50% after planting, You're looking at a premium that's $3 and will pay something like $80 or $90 if you're not able to apply nitrogen after planting. It's designed to be a financial remuneration if you can't get that nitrogen on after planting. So that's the PACE endorsement in a nutshell.
Is it worthwhile?
Yeah, particularly if you're looking at nitrogen applications and are concerned about getting on in the after planting, I would tell you that it's a very low probability that you don't get nitrogen on. But in case you're worried about that, there is this endorsement out there that will cover that event.
So if I'm all in, 85%, 90% to ECO, and the PACE endorsement, what am I spending this year?
Oh, we can get you up there a ways. you could easily spend $50 an acre. The other alternative is to take RPHPE and a 90 to 95% ECO. You no longer have the harvest price exclusion, but for $30, you get a 90% county guarantee in there. And if you're really concerned about that lower revenue side risk, that's an alternative that keeps your premium sort of in a $30 an acre range, roughly the same as RP85. Again, you give up, though, that upside if you have higher harvest prices. And I guess I would suspect that there's a higher than normal chance of having above our harvest price being above projected price. Having said that, you got to have a yield shortfall to get paid when that happens. So we will see what the year brings.
Indeed, we will. Thank you, Gary. Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. By the way, you can find crop insurance and ARC and PLC tools in the FarmDoc website. That's farmdoc.illinois.edu. And you can use those to figure out premiums ahead of time, even before you go and see your crop insurance agents. You can run different scenarios there as well at farmdoc.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, Ed Usett from University of Minnesota Extension, Ag Marketing Specialist there now joins us. Thank you, Ed, for taking the time with us today. I would like you to give me a big summary of how important Ukraine is on the planet as it relates to corn, Russia as well, as it relates to wheat, and what that means in general for global trade.
Well, they mean a lot, and I will focus on wheat. I know that a lot of your listeners think corn, but I'll tell you why wheat is important to your corn producers. First of all, just so people know, I think they know, but over the last 5 years, Russia, a country that 20 to 30 years ago, we wondered if they could grow enough wheat for their own use. Over the last 5 years, they are the largest single exporting, wheat exporting country in the world. Russia's number one. Ukraine is also a major wheat exporter and corn exporter and other things, but primarily wheat. They're not number, in this current crop year, Ukraine was on a pace to export more than the U.S. and Canada. And by the way, Todd, the U.S. and Canada are major wheat exporters. So you've got two countries, Ukraine and Russia, both major wheat exporters, one of them the biggest in the world as a country, so they're taken out of the picture or close to being taken out of the picture. Now, why this matters to corn producers, this is a nice little trivia question I like to throw at my students at the university. We all know that corn is the biggest feed grain in the world, in terms of production, trade, every way you want to measure it. Corn's number one. And then I ask my students, what's the number two feed grain in the world? And of course, you know, sorghum, barley, oats, rye. No, the number two feed grain in the world is wheat. Roughly 15 to 20% of the wheat produced in the world is fed to animals. And that, I don't think that even counts the byproduct in the milling industry that also goes into animal feed. So wheat is very important to the feed markets too.
How do you see the war in Ukraine continuing to affect the price of wheat, which is really rocketed upwards, something over $5 in the last week, over the next, I don't know, week or so?
Oh, boy. Todd, you're making me think of a student who sent me an email. I've got my students trading grain speculatively and in a risk management type of way. But they are, I have them speculating on grain. It's all paper. No one's getting hurt. And I had a student send me, I can't describe it as anything other than a tortured email a week ago. He said, Professor, what's going on? The wheat market was limit up yesterday, and the next day it was limit down. And I don't see what happened. I don't see what changed. I don't understand it. Please give me your opinion. You know what's precious there, Todd, is this guy thinks that I know how this is going to turn out. I don't know how it's going to turn out. And my response to him was something on the order of, you know, Evan, it's a wild and unpredictable market. You're trying to bring logic and rational thought into an illogical and irrational situation. Good luck. It's difficult. It's going to be hard. I don't know how it'll play out. It really depends on whether or not this war comes to an end soon. And I think it only comes to an end if a change is made in leadership in Russia. And I'm not a geopolitical analyst. I can't tell you how to do it. I will say, if you're marketing grain, if you're lucky enough to have some old crop on hand and you have profited in a big way, you look at, rather than thinking of a couple of big sales, think of numerous small sales and aim for that good average price. And you could think the same way about new crop pricing. Don't think about pricing big chunks. Break it up into little pieces and make many little sales. That's my thought process here.
The futures market trying to make sense of an illogical function on the planet at this point, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what that means. However, the cash grain market has to actually put it into some form of action. Mm-hmm. What is happening there?
Well, I'll tell you, the most interesting thing in cash grain markets is that traders are now bidding off the July contract. Now, what does that mean? You know, all of your merchandisers, your ethanol plants, your flour mills, your soybean crushers, they buy grain. And when they buy grain, they hedge. They're going to sell futures against that purchase. They have normally, the May contract is the nearby contract, and in normal times, that's where the hedge would be placed. But in the case of corn, if you look in elevator bids in Minnesota, Iowa, Ohio, Nebraska, they've almost all, two-thirds to three-quarters or more of the elevators and ethanol plants are bidding off the July contract, not off the May. Oddly enough, Todd, in your own home state of Illinois, I found that most of them are still off the May, but keep an eye on that. In the world of spring wheat, they've all gone to the July contract. I noticed soft wheat in Ohio. They're basing their bids off the September contract. This all has to do with the inverse and fear of the inverse. When you're a short hedger, and you're placing your hedge in the nearby contract, eventually you have to buy back that, you have to roll that hedge forward to the next contract. And back in, I'll tell you a little story, back in early 2008, I'll remind your listeners if they don't recall it, the wheat market went, what's the term, crazy. Spring wheat went to $20 a bushel. The winter wheats went into the teens. And the inverse from March to May and July was tremendous. And the hedgers who were short that nearby March and had to buy back March and sell May and July took a big haircut. You want to know how big? Now, this was mainly a wheat issue. It was 98% a wheat issue. So there aren't a lot of people who like to publicly state how much money they lost in a deal. But the North Dakota Mill is a public institution, and they put their money out. They put their financials out publicly. In the middle of 2009, they put out a press release and noted in the prior fiscal year, they lost $12 million. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, the year before they made $6 million and the year after they made $13 million. That, and these are hedging losses. They took a haircut of about $20 million due to that inverse. And just the simple act of rolling the hedge forward. General Mills reported hedging losses of over $100 million, much bigger miller. ConAgra reported losses of $33 million due to hedging. Your hedgers, your corn buyers, your wheat buyers, the reason they moved off to the July, they're saying, we're not going to mess with the May contract. We don't know where that inverse is going, but we've been down this road before and we're not going there again.
From your academic point of view, is that far enough out?
We'll find out. You can bet they're having, you can bet they're having conversations about that. But if you're wondering, you know, you might have listeners, why is my elevator bidding off the July contract? That's why. They don't want to be buying your corn, hedging it in the May, and then a month or now in this uncertain environment, needing to buy back the May and sell the July, which might be at a $2 or $3 or $4 inverse in sort of a worst case scenario. They're just avoiding the issue, going straight to the July and hedging in the July.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Well, Todd, just one last thing for those your listeners who follow the Olympics, and if you followed Olympic hockey, maybe no one did because the U.S. was eliminated early, but I have a son-in-law who is a hockey player from Finland, and he's wearing the gold medal, Todd, because they beat the Russians in the final.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. He had a good Olympics, and then he has left since then. That's the top of the world. Since then, he has left his Russian team and gone home to Helsinki, and his pro career in Russia is, stay tuned. I would say it's at the very least up in the air.
I'm glad he made it home safely.
Yeah, I am too. We are too.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Ed Ussett is an agricultural economist with University of Minnesota Extension. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.